Well, hello, hello, hello. I am Gentleman Junkie Jack, and welcome to the Underworld Podcast, the first in what I desperately hope will be a monthly series of conversations with the members of the invisible minorities that surround us. Or at least that surround me. I'll leave it up to your own personal paranoia to decide what kind of invisible people are surrounding you in your life. Mine are all pretty friendly. This is podcast number one. Number one in the sense of this show is the first podcast in this series, and it's the first one I've ever done. First podcast I've ever done. I'm all a Twitter to find out if it's any good. I'm finding it a challenge to relax in front of a microphone right now and to decide what approach I want to take with these interviews. For this show, I talked to Sunny Simone, who is both my girlfriend and a very experienced call girl slash sex worker. Those two things that I'm struggling to figure out how I want to do this and that she's my girlfriend mean that the tone of the interview turned out to be a little more conversational than I would have liked. In other words, there is way too much of me talking and far too little of her. That is a problem I'll have to correct in the future. Also, my diction and several other nervous vocal tics, which you may or may not notice, but to me make me sound like Jerry Espenson on Boston Legal. Also, my inability to pronounce things and to cough at inopportune times. I think this will be a learning process. Let me apologize in advance for the extreme length of this first outing. Originally, I had imagined trying to do a one-hour podcast, but when I went to edit this, I couldn't find it in my heart to cut out any more of it than I already did. It would have started sounding even more disjointed than it already does. I don't know how long it will finally turn out, but I'm thinking somewhere around 90 minutes. Anyway, future episodes will be closer to the one-hour mark, and now I think I've sufficiently inoculated myself against criticisms. Who knows? My interview today is with, as I said, Sunny Simone, a very high-end call girl. Sunny and I have been trying to record this conversation for weeks, and we finally sat down a couple of days ago and had a rambling, erratic discussion of all things related to the life of a working girl in the big city. I'll say more at the end of the show, but until then, enjoy. Your hideout in the Tenderloin.
The Red Room Bedroom.
The Red Room Bedroom.
That's what I sometimes call it.
Yeah. And you're Sunny Simone.
I'm Sunny Simone.
Yeah.
Today. And tomorrow. Other days I'm other people.
Other days and other people.
Yes.
So, and we were going to sit down and talk for a while and see what came up. If we just talk about a job and how you got into it.
Okay.
So you're a sex worker.
I'm a sex worker.
And, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, I should say that because this is the first podcast or the first interview that I'm doing, that you're my girlfriend. So I thought it would be better to start with a friendly audience, or at least somebody I knew a lot about beforehand, so I didn't end up, you know, stuttering too much. And since I'm, you know, since I now have moved into actually speaking for the microphone, I can tell that, you know, my voice quality has changed and everything.
Yeah.
But I'll just have to deal with that.
That's right.
As we go on. Who knows? We are sitting here this afternoon talking with Sunny Simone, who is a sex worker here in San Francisco.
Yep.
And I wanted to talk to you about what it's like to work here in this city as opposed to other cities, because you've worked in other places.
A little bit, yeah. I've worked in L.A. a little bit. I worked in Detroit for a couple of weeks. I worked at one of the ranches out in Nevada. That was an experience. I worked in the East Bay, but that's not really very different. But that's really it. I would have liked to do more travel, but I have seen a few other places. And I'm not sure that's a question I can actually answer.
You don't know the difference? I mean, well, it's nothing strikes you immediately about the difference between working in San Francisco, say?
I would say that the clients are better here in terms of, okay, so what does better mean? Their shame issues are fewer. Particularly, I noticed that, you know, maybe that's a California thing, actually. They're a little bit more open. I've also worked in Santa Barbara, too. They're a little bit more open-minded, comfortable with themselves and their sexuality. And again, that's not everybody, but that's true of a lot of people. What else? They maybe are a little bit more demanding.
Yeah? Like they have a higher expectation, of professionalism.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're more sophisticated consumers of erotic services.
Yeah, I think because the people who are offering it here are a little bit, are more sophisticated and more comfortable with what they do.
There's certainly a lot more people doing it here.
I've heard that's true, yes. Mm-hmm. It certainly seems that way, and it seems to have increased over the last 10 years. I've been in the business for almost 13 years now.
Yeah.
So it's a long time.
Yeah. So for people who don't know much about sex work, so suppose you were coming to this, well, let's just assume that someone's coming to this conversation and they've never talked to a prostitute before and they don't know anything about it. All they know about it is what they've seen on TV. So we have, yes, and we can tell from your reaction that might not be the best place to start as your impression of what prostitutes do.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. I remember when I started, you know, you come at it with all these preconceived ideas about who a sex worker is and what she does. And even that, you know, they're all female, because obviously we're not. The first thing that you have to get over is this idea that, you know, it's dangerous. Because on every media outlet, every television show, every movie just about that you see featuring a prostitute, she ends up dead in the end, or saved, like what's her name in that movie?
Oh, you mean the Woody Allen
pretty,
movie?
No. Pretty
oh,
Woman.
And Pretty Woman. Yeah,
Pretty Woman,
of course. Yes. Yeah.
Rescued by, you know, by the rich man.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, Julia Roberts is playing the only virgin prostitute in the history of the world.
Favorite movie. And it can be, you know, there are risks and everything. But honestly, the truth is that most people out there, most men, even men looking for sex, are actually really nice people. I think there's a class issue that, you know, I'm not talking about here. I mean, obviously I'm a middle class sex worker. I've educated. You know, I charge a lot of money. I work in safe environment and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, let's talk about, let me speak in complete sentences.
Yes.
Let's talk about your background.
Okay.
And, you know, we have an issue, we have image of the prostitute as someone who works on the street and is probably drug addicted.
Right.
And who doesn't really want to be doing this.
Right.
Is only doing this at most, or at best is only doing this until they can get a real job.
Right.
Or, is being, as I said, being forced into it, or
right.
And also someone who's very young,
right.
And you know, incredibly beautiful,
right.
Or someone who's like I said, just hangs out on the street and stays in the shadows so that you don't notice what they actually look like,
right.
And so none of that fits you, basically.
No.
So you came from a middle class background.
Yeah.
Grew up
on the East Coast.
On the East Coast, and went to a major university.
Yep.
And graduated from there,
yep.
Got a degree, and then sometime around age 29 or something?
Yeah, I mean, I started whoring when I was 30, but I discovered the idea at some point, you know, in my late 20s, by reading a book, actually, because I love to read.
Yeah.
And I read this book called Women of the Light. It's edited by a guy named Kenneth Ray Stubbs, and it featured a bunch of women who... some of whom were sex workers, dancers, prostitutes. Others were kind of in more straight fields, nurse, some other kind of sexual healers, that kind of thing, who talked about the sacred aspects of prostitution. And that really captured my imagination. I mean, I was kind of lost, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, and then I read this book, and it kind of jived with my spiritual beliefs and my lifestyle and my ethical and moral beliefs, and it just seemed like a great thing to do, and it was exciting and fun, and I could feel good about what I was doing. I mean, I was working as a legal secretary at the time, and yeah.
So you feel that, you know, being a prostitute is more moral than being a legal secretary?
I don't want to make that judgment either.
For you, it was more ethical?
For me, it was certainly more doable. I didn't like working in an office. I'm not very good at keeping schedules. You know, I'll admit, I have some issues with living in the straight world. I'm not really that good at it. So this was a way for me to live according to my own rhythms and to do something that would help people. And that really was the thing that mattered to me the most, that I could actually be of service to the community and the world. And I know lots of people would argue with that assessment of the work, but making people feel good is a good thing.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's an issue we should probably hone in on, or I've always been interested in, is that the fear, I think, that a lot of customers or people outside the business have,
right,
is that everything you do is a performance,
right,
and that you don't care at all about your clients,
right,
and that you're only in it for the money,
right,
and that absent the money, you wouldn't do anything even remotely like it. There's always this fear that, or at least there's a stereotype that prostitutes are, they despise their clients.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that hasn't been, I mean, you and I have been, we've known each other for almost 5 years now, over 4 years.
Yeah.
And I've never seen you express anything but tenderness and caring for your clients.
Yeah, with the exception of a few
assholes. But yeah, well, some people behave badly, and that right, makes you angry, like any service organization or
right,
service level thing. But you generally care about the level of service you
yes,
give to the clients, and
yeah,
and you've always often spoken about this as being something that you do that you feel is of service to people.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always been important to me, I think maybe for most people, you know, you want to do the best job you can do. And I've also come at it from the perspective of a healer, because I've studied massage and I've studied various kinds of healing, some sexual, some other. And I want to improve people's lives. I mean, you know, on the most basic level, that's what it gets down to, you know, making people feel good, providing them with pleasure, with healing, with an understanding ear, you know, being able to accept their sexuality. And, you know, a lot of people, I find, are hiding their true sexuality, you know, I mean, from themselves
yeah,
even. But to be able to be somebody who can non-judgmentally listen to somebody's fantasy and say, oh, okay, that's good, you know, that's kind of interesting, let's do that. Or, you know, that's fine, I can't really do that, but, you know, I think that's a great fantasy. That can be a huge thing for people, you know? I mean, I've seen people just completely open up and change and just relax in this way, you know.
Just from being accepted?
Yeah, just from being accepted.
From being having their...
And being seen, you know, and not being mocked or scorned or reacted to with disgust. And, you know, again, you're right, the stereotype is that, you know, we hate our clients and... You know, I know how that, I can imagine how that arises. And, you know, there are times when it's frustrating working with people. But if you like what you're doing, ultimately, then why would you hate your clients?
Yeah. I mean, certainly in our community, in the, what would we call our community? The pervert world.
Community.
The sex positive community.
Yeah.
We can call it that, sure.
Yeah.
Sex, spirituality.
Right.
The whole, that whole group of people who
right,
are sexual nonconformists, but I think sex positive is the general term thrown out for the world. This
right,
is the face that we're always trying to turn toward the people outside of our community.
Right.
Say we are the sex positive people.
Right.
And that includes sex workers, strippers, just general perverts, you know,
right,
people who have non-standard sexual practices.
Right. Well, in the feminist community, you know, they talk about sex-positive mm-hmm, feminists, you know, as opposed to mm-hmm, the anti-porn, you know, anti-sex. I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't mm-hmm, describe themselves as anti-sex, but that's kind of, I think, where I got that phrase from, sex-positive feminism and sex-positive
yeah, that's
community.
Right. Yeah, it all comes from, like, a lot of those books that we were all reading in the early 90s.
Right.
You know, Pat Califia's books and...
Right.
Research Magazine,
right,
was it? And who else was doing sex-positive stuff?
Oh, Carol Queen.
Yeah.
God, I'm never good at coming up with names.
Yeah, right off the top of your head.
Right.
Yeah,
we should make a book list.
Yeah, maybe I can remember.
Peruse our shelves.
Yeah, there might be a book list to put in the show notes, but I don't know if it would be worth it. I mean, people aren't going to come to this interview looking for an education, I think.
Right, right.
Or at least certainly not, you know. What books were people reading 15 years ago? that led them to become prostitutes.
Right.
And that might be a good topic for a dissertation.
Yeah.
But not necessarily something for show notes for a podcast.
Right.
So I was starting to get to something along the idea of identity. And, you know, I wanted, when we talked about doing this interview before I actually, you know, turned on the recorder.
Right.
We were going to talk about the word whore.
Mm, right.
Because you sometimes use that word to describe yourself.
Right.
And I find that I'm not comfortable using it, unless I'm referring to myself.
Right.
So, and mostly you only use it to refer to yourself, but I guess I've heard you use it to refer to other
right.
other prostitutes,
and
other
and
working
I
girls.
And I use whoring to refer to what I do.
Yeah, and that can be such a loaded term,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of people who are coming to this from, say, a sex work 101 perspective,
right.
Haven't really thought about the different names for what you do and,
right.
and whether these things are insulting or not.
Right. That's another thing that I think that was discussed a lot in the 90s, at least among sex workers, and I think it came initially from the idea of the sacred whore, which is something that my friend and colleague Cozy Fabian talked about a lot, and other people too. I mean, it was kind of a big topic for a while. You know, going back to the roots of the supposed and possibly most likely mythical roots of prostitution, where, you know, sex was considered sacred and women or even men sleeping with people from the community as a holy act, as a sacred act, was supposedly part of the worship. And we don't really know whether it was or not, according to all the research I've read, and I think I've read most of it. But that word whore has kind of ancient roots, and I like it. I mean, I don't think of it as a derogatory word. It's like cunt, it's like fag, it's all those words that have been used to denigrate, and we reclaim them. But I've gotten away from using it to the uninitiated. I mean, I used to talk about whoring to anybody all the time.
Yeah.
I was pretty boring on the topic, I think.
In silence a restaurant doing that
yeah.
stuff.
Yes, and I probably have. I mean, I've had people blanch and walk carefully away from me, you know, in one of my rants. But I'll use it because it's how I think of myself as a whore, and I think of what I do as whoring. But when I'm talking to the uninitiated, shall we say, I may say escort, a more sort of proper term that we use to couch what we do. Or maybe we shouldn't actually even say that because...
yeah, because things like those are the terms that are used in advertising.
Yes, yes.
So you don't want to necessarily draw a one-to-one distinction between the way things are advertised
yeah.
and what is actually being done.
Right, exactly.
You know, is there a sense that maybe we want to preserve an inside and an outside of the group? Like you have to go through some sort of an initiation to find out what to gain the secret knowledge, to be able to decode what's being publicly advertised?
You know, I don't even know if I can answer that question. I mean, there always is, you know, there's the initiated and the uninitiated, you know, and there's different levels, you know. If you are a sex worker, you have different information than if you're just partaking of the services. And I'm ambivalent about whether I want to break that wall down. But just to finish the other thing I was saying, the other thing we use is the term sex worker, which Carol, God, what's her name? Carol Lee.
Scarlet Harlot.
Scarlet Harlot claims to have created that word. I don't.
Does she?
Yeah, yeah. Which she may have, for all I know. And it's a great term, actually. I think it's the most non-judgmental and... But, you know, again, it's like it creates a separation between what we do, sex work, you know. I mean, it is work, and it is sex,
I think that's what, I always had the feeling that that's what was, people were trying to capture with that, was that there was both, it was sexual.
Right.
It wasn't desexual, it wasn't just an activity you were doing for money.
Right.
It is sexual for you, as well as for the client.
Right.
And it is work, because it isn't something you would do
right.
If you weren't getting paid.
And I'm not sure that I would say, well, is it sexual for me? Yes, sometimes it is, certainly. But it's sex unlike any other sex that you have. And this is what people who are not sex workers can never really understand. I mean, yes, I can get turned on. I enjoy it most of the time. But it's not like having sex. It's not like my personal relationship. It's not like having sex with you. And it will never be that, you know? And anyone who wants, who insists that their sex worker or their provider is another term that's used, that they, it will never be the same thing. And everybody has to understand that. But that doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean it's less bad. It's just different.
Yeah. It's funny because it seems like a lot of clients that you've had, the way you've talked to about it, they have a particular fantasy about the way they want you to be.
Mm-hmm.
The common term is the GFE, the girlfriend experience.
Right.
And they like to have this sense that you're enjoying it too.
Right.
And there's a sort of a consensual fantasy going on, an agreement to both pretend that you're doing this strictly for fun.
Right, right.
And that you're getting as much out of it as he is.
Right.
You know.
And I'm perfectly willing to partake in that fantasy. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like my job is to create the best experience for the client, whatever that is, as much as I can tell, which involves a lot of mind reading and and interpreting signals, and to some extent just sort of going on rote. I mean, there's a, you know, I have a structure. I stick to the structure, you know, I smile a lot, I interact, I try to make the person feel comfortable and figure out what it is they want to do sexually. And to have a good time, but not to the point of, I mean, I'm not one of those people that tends to, like, scream and yell and fake orgasms and you know, do that whole thing. I just, you know, I don't like to pretend.
Well, that could be seen as also a style of acting.
Yeah, it is.
it's a more realistic style of acting, because if you go totally over the top, then you ruin the fantasy because everybody suddenly realizes you're faking.
Right. You know. But, you know, apparently some guys like that, and, you know, I wonder if over the years I may have lost clients because I don't play that game. You know, I'm not going to be having screaming orgasms because actually I don't have screaming orgasms in real life. So, you know.
So it just feels false to you.
It feels false, and I can't do that. Yeah, and I for years I would never fake an orgasm, and I will admit that I do on occasion.
Yeah, if it's part of what the client is looking for.
If it's part of what they're looking for.
Because it's a fantasy.
Yeah.
Everybody. You're creating a fantasy. The two of you are creating a consensual fantasy, and that's something I think a lot of people overlook.
Right.
About sex work, is that the two of you together are creating a consensual fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it speaks to the class privilege that a client has, that he can come in and he can even pretend to himself that you're not creating a fantasy together.
I think that's a matter of class privilege.
Well, it's a lot like male privilege, because one of the best things about being a man and having privilege is that you can force everybody else to go along with your view of the world,
right.
and make everybody else pretend that what you say is real is real, and just to get along, they'll go along with it too.
Right. I wonder if that's why there is that sort of belief that so many sex workers don't like their work, and why maybe some don't, is the idea that they're supposed to, or that the perception by the client is that they're, you know, like, one of the things that always annoys me is when clients call up and they want to come over right now. Like, they think I'm sitting around in my lingerie and makeup waiting for them to call. You know, it's like I have a life, you know? It's like schedule, make an appointment, like if you're going to the doctor or something like that, you know, but people don't want to do that. You know, I'm not sitting around, and that always bothers me. I mean, you know. I can't remember how that related to what you were saying.
Yeah. Well, that they have a fantasy about the way,
right?
And that they get, and the client gets kind of cranky on the phone. The potential client gets kind of cranky on the phone if they ask, "Oh, can I see you today?" And no, can't see me today.
Yeah.
You know.
And I know there are plenty of people out there that, you know, will drop everything or they'll lie and say that they can be ready when they can't be, or that they'll show up when they can't.
And just be late.
Mm. I mean, I know people do that, but, you know, for me, it's like, I like to be professional. I like to really be ready to see the person and be in the right space. And, And I think it makes a difference because I have all these great reviews and people tell me I'm, you know, because when I'm on, I'm on. I want to really be there. And if I can't be there, I'd rather not work.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the things about working in San Francisco, and I guess it's true in most large cities, is that there are internet sites you can go to where providers, where working girls, working boys, for that matter, are reviewed by their clients.
Right. Actually, they have those all over the country now.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Most large cities. Yeah. Most providers who've been around for a while, you can find reviews of them.
Right.
Under one name or another.
Right.
And this is not something that was even 10 years ago, that, you know, before the internet was really, really caught hold, you know, the people that you would expect.
Yeah, well, when I first started in the business, I mean, the internet was, you know, something that only geeks were a part of, and that was, you know, that was in 95. So we all advertised in the newspaper. There was a local sex rag, The Spectator, which I don't think is...
No, it's still... I think it's still around, yeah.
And the various other small papers, and even The Chronicle to some degree. And that's how we got our clients, and people called. And it was so much harder because, you know, you had to have this pat description that you'd say, you'd end up like, you know, repeating the same thing over and over. And now people see your picture, it's much easier, and...
Yeah, there's a lot more information on your website.
Right.
Like, if someone finds you online, they'll go to, typically they'll go to an escort site for their city, and then they'll see your ad there.
Right.
And there'll be a link there to your personal site.
Right.
Your personal, professional website.
Yeah.
Which is sunnysimone.com.
Right.
And they go there, and there's a lot of information there.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, so they actually come to the phone, the part where the phone call, with like they're ready to have an actual conversation with you.
Right, exactly. So it makes it easier because, you know, I don't have to worry that someone who's not attracted to my physical type is going to show up at the door. And, you know, that's something that used to happen a lot more, I think, is, you know, the guy shows up and he takes one look at you and he goes, "You're not what I was expecting," you know, for whatever reason. He's got some picture in his mind. Well, now he's got a photograph and, you know, for the most part.
Several.
Yeah. And obviously people alter their photographs sometimes. I don't. Another thing I don't do. I also don't lie about my age. But at least, you know, no one's expecting a blonde 25-year-old when they walk in the door, because I'm not going to pretend to be that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just no percentage. Do you think that, I mean, have you talked to other sex workers who do things like that?
Well, in the agencies, they often do that. You know, the guy calls up, he says, "I want, you know, a busty Asian with the pink hair." And, you know, they say, "Oh, yeah, we have that." And then, you know, a white girl shows up.
Yeah.
And so she was busy. Well, how about me since I'm here? You know, and most of the time that works, but supposedly. But I never wanted that. I mean, I have, since the internet, I have never had anybody walk out the door. I think I've only had it once or twice, and someone showed up, and one time a guy got freaked out for some reason.
But that wasn't a matter of him, of you not being what he expected.
No, no.
That was just a matter of the reality of the situation.
Yes,
what became too much for him.
Yeah, yeah. He started to worry I was a cop or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, do you get that? That's like the demarcation point between people who've been around sex work and people who are like very first timers.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they even act like that on their second time to see a sex worker?
No one says it. I think people here are pretty sophisticated. You know, I very rarely these days get somebody who says, "I'm not a cop." Are you? You know, like thinking that that's going to protect them, which it doesn't, by the way.
Oh yeah, there's that.
That thing that they can't say.
They're not a cop.
Yeah.
Yes, that's an illusion. That's a myth.
Yeah, it's a myth, and most people here know that. So, you know, the first meeting with anybody in any situation is always going to be a little awkward, and particularly when there's the expectation of being intimate. You know, it takes both of us. I mean, I'm often nervous, although I hide it well. You know, you have to get used to the person. You want to check them out. You want to make sure that there's some communication there.
And then, so, you know, there's always that adjustment that you do as soon as the person walks in the door. Have you ever sent anyone away after they've come to the door?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Just a few times out of 10 years, 13 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because why? They made you feel physically unsafe? Or?
Once a guy made. He just. He had no emotional reaction whatsoever. And I actually had him on the table already, and he just made me uncomfortable, and so I gave him his money back and asked him to leave. One time a guy turned out to be drunk, and I won't see anybody who comes in the door under the influence. If I could detect it, you know, yeah. It's like, you don't get to stay.
Really? Why is that?
I don't know. I just don't like it.
Yeah. You don't like being around drunk people.
Well, yeah. It's one thing if I do a dinner date with somebody and we're drinking wine or whatever because, you know, I don't know. There's something about the doing it together thing, but, you know, somebody... I just feel like it adds an element of risk to anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If the person's loaded.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
If you can tell.
Not to mention... Right, exactly. And, you know, people who've been drinking are often harder to work with in various ways.
Yeah. Yeah, in other words, they can't respond sexually.
Right, exactly.
So... Exactly. Yeah, it can feel... I could imagine that it would feel pretty useless, yeah. Or it could be very frustrating.
Yeah.
To be trying to do your job,
right.
And have the person just be non-responsive.
Right. So yeah, it's just one of my rules. I mean, I think every sex worker has rules about, you know, what they're comfortable with and what they're not, and other people might be fine with that, you know. But I don't party with people. Which I used to get requests for much more often than I do now, but I tend to, I think, get more older clients.
What do you mean, to party with people? Like, they wanted to go to a party?
No.
To be the date? Or?
No, they want to either smoke pot or do cocaine or do drugs, and I don't do that, so... Yeah. Now, I don't mind if somebody brings a bottle of wine or something like that, but I'm not a drunk person.
Yeah. So. You don't get really high and stuff. Plus, also, it's not safe.
Yeah, exactly. Because I need to have my wits about me and, you know...
Yeah, there is that. I mean, there aren't a lot of jobs where there is at least the perception of so much danger from the client.
Right, right.
But any job, I think, that where you're in a room alone with someone who's stronger than you are,
yeah.
You know, and is a stranger to you,
yeah.
There is a higher risk factor there than there is with if you're a waitress or a secretary or
right.
something.
Well, you know, and the thing is we forget that every job, or there are many jobs where you find yourself in a room alone with somebody who's bigger or stronger than you are. For example, a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it's not a different person every day, but a massage therapist certainly has to deal with that all the time. And, you know, I'm always surprised by the amount of risk that people think is there that I honestly don't think is as bad. I mean, you know, knock on wood, I have had very few problems over my 13-year career and no serious ones. Mm-hmm. And I think that's partly being careful and really checking people out before you let them in the door, but also just the fact that, like I said, the majority of people are not... Majority of men looking for sex are not dangerous. People looking for sex are not dangerous innately. Mm. They're just human.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think the worry that people have about that... Well, I mean, I've talked with women about prostitution who weren't prostitutes in order to sort of gauge what they felt about it.
Right.
And usually they have that same stereotype,
right.
Which I'm sure anybody who's listening to this can tick off,
right.
Which I did earlier, I guess, in this conversation about
right.
you not really wanting to be there and only
right.
doing it because of low self-esteem.
Or to get drug money or something
to get
like
drug
that.
Money.
Yeah.
And once in a while, you do run into people who are working
right.
for that reason.
Well, and I'm sure there are actually many people... who work for that reason.
Yeah.
But it doesn't define all of us. Mm-hmm. And I know many, many people who are actually more like me than... I know more people like me than I know, like, the other kind. Like,
yeah.
the stereotype.
Well, yeah. Of course, you know, you live in the Tenderloin here in San Francisco. So you do see, like, women that work the streets
right.
down here.
Right.
And it's a different group of people. It's not like you, you know...
Yeah, they're...
And often they can't even tell that you do the same line of work that
no,
they do.
No, I do not look like a sex worker walking around the street. I have schleppy clothes, no makeup. I mean, I'm a mess.
Yeah. Well, you only do the sex work when somebody comes to your apartment.
Right.
It's a totally different branch of the
right.
industry,
right.
so to speak.
Exactly.
And, you know, I don't want people to get the idea that we're denying that there are such things as,
right.
say, sex slaves.
Right.
Or that some women are forced into it.
And that women do get raped and killed by clients. It does happen.
But I think that the perception of how often it happens
right, exactly.
is probably wildly overblown.
Exactly. And, you know, there are, I'm always surprised, especially back in the day when I used to talk about sex work much more openly and tell everyone that I what I did, is that women, again, that you'd never suspect, mm-hmm. would come up to me, you know, sidle up to me in mm-hmm. private and say, yeah, you know, I tried it for a while, or I used to be a sex worker, and, you know, and is their big secret, you know, they never told anybody or whatever.
They never told anybody they were a call girl for,
right, exactly.
for 2 weeks in college
yeah.
or something?
And it for whatever reason, it didn't work out, or maybe they did it for a while, and then they moved on to something else, which is, I think, the case with most of us, you know. Because it's not a job for everybody. But a lot of people have done it, you know, it's... Mm-hmm. And I'm sure if the men admitted, how many men admitted that they had seen prostitutes, we'd have an even huger.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, who are all these people voting against, you know, decriminalizing prostitution? Well, you know, anyone out there who's ever been a prostitute or seen one should be supporting that.
Yeah, should be supporting decriminalization.
Yes.
Which leads me to my suspicion.
Yeah.
That perhaps, you know, as many people as there are who do sex work and as many people are that are customers of sex workers,
yeah.
they might still be in the minority overall.
Yeah, they could be. It's hard to know.
It is.
It know. Seems like, you know, I've probably had thousands of clients, mm-hmm. which means I've had sex with thousands of men.
Yeah.
Which is a shocking thought. I wish
is
I
it?
Could count. Yes,
yeah.
it is a shocking thought.
Yeah, well, you could have kept count, I suppose.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it would be hard.
There would have been a lot of record keeping involved.
Yeah.
a lot of, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, do you count, like, okay, so you saw one guy, and then 6 years later you see him again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hard to keep track of.
You count him twice?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You don't suddenly count the number of times you've had sex
right.
in your life. I mean,
oh, God.
Yeah. That's just tiring to think about.
I know. It really is. It really is. But how many people can say, you know, that they still enjoy their work after...
yeah. 13 years?
Yeah. Yeah. Although I have to admit, I'm more than ready to move on at this point. I'm working on other options for my life and, you know, looking forward to the day, which I think will be soon, when I hang up my golden sandals.
The golden sandals of the...
There is this story of ancient Greece that these prostitutes they'd wear these sandals and special sandals, and then when they were ready to leave the business, they'd go to the Temple of Aphrodite and they'd leave their sandals on the altar, and that would be the end of their career. Yeah. So.
Which would be difficult to do these days because people tend to drift in and out of it.
Yeah, it's true. I actually did quit for a period of time and came back to it.
Number of years? A couple of years, was it? Or?
Yeah, it was... It was about 2 years, I think.
Yeah, and then you came back to it because you needed to make money.
Yeah, and also because my identity was really wrapped up in whoring. I really couldn't get used to being a wife, which is the reason. Well, the reason I quit is because I was married to somebody. I didn't need the money anymore, and was, you know, getting tired of it and wanted to do something else. And but I found that I couldn't. I was so used to thinking of myself as a whore, and I was so proud of my identity as a whore, that to not be a whore felt really weird, and even after 2 years, I couldn't really get used to it. I mean, you know, everybody likes a vacation, and for a while it was great, and I went to school and studied art and did all sorts of fun things. And then I was kind of like, and who am I in this universe? You know, now I'm a sacred whore, I'm a sex worker, I'm a prostitute, I'm an escort, you know, this is what I am.
So then you come back to it, and you've been working it for the last 4 or 5 years. Again.
Actually, it's been... Oh, God. I don't know. I'm bad with time. It's been longer than that, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Since you came back to working that way?
Yeah, I think it's been about 7 years.
7 years, okay.
Yeah.
But now you say you're ready to really retire.
Yeah.
And I think... Yeah. Forgive me if I'm making a presumption here, but it seems like part of that is that you're getting older.
Yeah.
And sex work is one of those things that you really can't do.
Well...
into late in life. Although
honestly,
it is
I've
possible.
Known many sex workers who worked late in life, much, you know,
well, yeah,
well beyond my age. And
I can think of two or three of our friends off the top of our head,
right,
like over 60.
Right. And there's another story I read in one of these books about courtesans, you know, mm-hmm. where this famous courtesan is, you know, getting out of her car, you know, in the... And this young man runs up and says, "Oh, I would love to see you. And, you know, you've always been my..." And she was like 70-something years old, you know. And this is like in the 1800s or something, you know. So, you know, there's always people out there that will be interested in you, I think, no matter what you look like, no matter who you are.
I think that's more for women than for men.
You think so?
It's much harder for older men.
Maybe.
Unless you work a certain type of a niche market.
Right.
I mean, as an older man, you have to be pretty muscular. You have to be the full daddy type.
Oh, yeah.
You have to be very macho.
Well, from everything I know, the gay scene is completely different than, you know, straight men and gay men. I don't know. It's just a different
I've never seen any sort of cross-socializing between... rent boys, I don't know, working boys and working girls.
Well, there is, actually, because, you know, I started a group a number of years ago that was
You had at
exactly
least one guy.
Oh, no, we had quite a number of
guys. Oh, really?
Yeah, it was originally about 50-50, and I don't know what it is now, because I kind of turned it over to somebody else and stopped going, but we were coming at it kind of from the healing perspective. A lot of us were Body Electric people. Body Electric is a school in the East Bay, and...
Here in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
They're a massage school or a tantric massage school? What would
kind
you call them?
Kind of sex and erotic education. Mm. Plus, they also have a massage school, which is regular massage.
Yeah. And so a lot of people were coming from Body Electric, and you started this group, this support group.
Yeah, support group of people doing kind of healing / sex work. Mm. And, you know, a lot of the people I've known and I myself have done... work that was focused specifically on healing work around people's sexuality and eroticism, or using sex to do healing work.
Yeah. And apparently, but we were talking about you leaving the business.
Right.
And I was saying that it was my impression that part of it was because you were getting older.
Right.
But what else? So you've been in it for so long, and you've told me that you're just sort of tired of it.
Yeah, you know... When I started doing this work, it was a revelation. It was so exciting. It was so fulfilling. It was empowering. I mean, you can't imagine how empowering it is to be... Now, I was 30 when I started. You know, and I had some issues around my sexuality and my self-esteem and that kind of thing. And to have men constantly praising me and paying money to be around me and to be touched by me was incredibly empowering and really changed my life in such positive ways.
It didn't make you feel cheap?
No, definitely not. It made me feel fantastic. I mean, I don't really understand people who have these issues or assumptions about prostitution, like it's going to make you feel bad. And I guess that's true for some people, and I don't want to deny that experience, but it only has ever made me feel good. So it was this amazing experience for a long time, and you know I learned so much about men and so much about people and about my own sexuality and amazing. And then you get to a point like in anything when you've learned what you can learn, and I can still be good at what I do. Obviously, I have skills that you know no 22-year-old starting out is ever going to have until she's worked in the business as long as I have. But it's not a challenge anymore the way it was, and so I'm ready to do something that's new.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, you know, I'm not using my mind, you know, because, again, I've conquered I've figured out all the thing. I know how to read people really well. I know how to, you know, turn around a session that's not going that well or just to get over it if it is, you know, if I can't do anything about it. And I just need something that's more mentally challenging. So that's why I'm doing the writing now.
Yeah, you're just moving on to be... Yeah, that's another question about living here in San Francisco and being part of the PERF community, sex-positive community,
right.
Is that everybody we know has these, like, everyone has a nom de fait.
Right.
You know?
Right.
as opposed to, you know, nom de guerre or nom de plume.
Right.
It's nom de fête. It's the name you party under.
Right.
You know?
It's true.
Or, you know, or in L.A. they refer to it as bar name.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a name you give people in the bar when you meet them. So, and unless you decide you want them, you know, to get to know them, then you give them your real name.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, partly it's an identity issue.
Mm-hmm.
So Sunny Simone is my whore identity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's not that different than me for real, you know, again, because I don't hide so much of my identity, but
mm-hmm.
you just want that little bit of separation, you know. It's sort of like a brand.
Yeah.
In a way.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I've appreciated them. Well, I appreciate more the people that I know that are sex positive, because if you're using this as an actual aspect of your personality, an expression of your personality,
right.
you tend to choose something that's more expressive of yourself,
right.
whereas I've noticed that young women who are strippers,
uh-huh.
they choose these bizarre, outlandish work names.
Yeah.
They're not even what you'd call a nom de fête. They're work names.
Right.
And the part of their job is to identify that stripper and to, but also to signal to the clients that this person who is stripping is not the same person that you see on the street.
Right.
If you see me wearing my sweats at the corner store next week,
don't talk to me.
Yeah. Well, or don't think that you know me.
Right.
Because I took a 20 from you and you called me Mercedes all night.
Right. Right. Yeah, I've never stripped, and I don't really know much about that world.
Mm-hmm.
I think strippers must be incredibly courageous, because, you know, even though I have sex with all these people, and, you know, and a lot of people would think that would be challenging for them,
mm-hmm.
for me, standing up in front of a bunch of people and taking my clothes off and dancing around would be so much harder.
Yeah, because at least with your clients, they're taking their clothes off, too.
Oh, yeah, that's part of it, isn't it? I never really thought of
that. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's it. It's
I remember talking to Carol Queen one time about working at the Lusty Lady.
Uh-huh.
And she was saying that the private shows were so much easier because if the guy was pulling his cock out to masturbate, he was a lot more vulnerable.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But, if you go to a strip club and you are sitting in the audience and you've got your, you know, you're fully dressed, but the woman is naked, you cannot help but realize that this is a situation of judgment, where you are judging her, where the audience is judging the performer on her looks, on her skills, on whatever energy she's putting out, on how she's making you feel.
Right.
And sometimes that I've seen young women at strip clubs who thrived on it,
mm-hmm.
but also people who clearly were not suited for it at all.
Yeah, I think, you know, each kind of sex work probably has a certain kind of person that's good at it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're really good at talking dirty and stuff, then, you know, do the phone sex and that kind of thing. If you, I don't know, there must be other things, you know? I think the other kind of thing, it's not being naked in front of people either, because I could do the webcam thing, like I thought about doing that. It's not so much a body thing, I don't know what it is. I just know that even if I'm here in my apartment and somebody wants me to, like, do a strip tease, I just find it kind of awkward.
Yeah. Well, it's because you don't feel comfortable as a dancer, perhaps?
That's part of it, yeah. I love dancing, but not when someone's looking at me.
Yeah, not as a form of entertainment for other people.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you and I have done things,
Well, we've done public things.
Yeah, public things like the ball dance,
for
example, and, you know, which is, for people who don't know what a ball dance is, it's an adaptation of a Hindu ceremony that's been brought into this sex positive community where people get together and we literally pierce ourselves.
Right.
We sew weights onto our bodies, or we pierce each other with pieces of metal through the cheeks or my personal favorite, putting hooks through the flesh of your chest or something. And we pull on those piercings and we dance ecstatically with that. But in that case, it doesn't matter what you look like.
Right.
Because the whole social situation is about your inner experience.
Well, and that's about ecstasy. It's about it's about trancing and that sort of thing, and not necessarily about sexual gratification.
Yeah.
It's not like someone couldn't have sex in the middle of the room because no one would care, but
yeah.
That's not the focus of it.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, well, it is about sexual gratification in that you are experiencing sexual gratification from the act itself.
I don't.
On a level, on a certain level.
See, I don't at all. For me, it's a completely different experience. I find that true with flogging, too. And we're getting into other areas of realities.
Yeah,
but, you know, certain kinds of SM play are not about sex at all. They're about trancing out. They're about leaving my body or getting into an altered state. And, you know, you could argue that sex is an altered state, but for me, it's they're just very different.
Yeah, difference. It's a different set of hormones, I suppose, or a different
endorphins.
Endorphins, that's the word I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
Yeah, my memory has fallen apart because of the hormones in late middle age, and also because of all the drugs I take. I find that there is a definite continuum of physical sensations, like that sex, having sex itself, is on the same continuum as the ball dance.
Really? Huh.
In that it is a physical, emotional, and spiritual experience, an experience of intense ecstasy, and it is takes me out of my sense of ego, out of myself.
Mm-hmm.
It helps me transcend who I am at that moment, or who I normally am, my sense of identity.
Right.
It helps both sex and ecstatic sensation or extreme sensations such as piercing and things.
Mm-hmm.
They help me to realize that my sense of self, my identity, is a fragile, constructed thing, and that if it's shattered, it's not necessarily terrible.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So it's different than stripping, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So when people want you to entertain them, you don't feel comfortable, or what, you don't feel graceful?
Maybe it's like you said, it's about the judging. And maybe because I don't feel in control in the same way. One of the things that I think people don't understand about the act of sex work or being, you know, the sex worker is that you are totally in control. I am totally in control. So, you know, the client may think they're in control, or the perception may be that, you know, this is all for his benefit. And I say his, I have had female clients, they're just not that common. But it's not true, I'm the one in control.
Yeah.
You know, and I set the pace and the tone and what happens and what doesn't happen and all of that. But if I'm standing in front of someone and they want me to strip, I don't know, somehow I sort of feel out of control.
Yeah. Well, I can understand that. I mean, and incidentally, I think that that women might think that the man is in control.
Yeah.
But I don't think there are many men that would think they were, that would.
Anyone who's actually got, you know, seen a sex worker understands.
Or even if you haven't seen a sex worker,
yeah.
I think most men have enough knowledge of themselves to realize that if they were in that situation, the woman would be in total control
of
them. I mean, unless they're really, really angry and they don't like women at all,
right.
Most of us really would like you to like us.
Yeah.
And most men who are sexually attracted to women would very much like you to like us
right.
on some level.
Right, it's very true.
You know, and even if you see someone as in the sense of a client.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like my experience, I've been a sex worker, but I've also been a client.
Right.
And my experience of being a client is that you come to some sort of an agreement within yourself, a compromise within yourself, somewhere between believing the fantasy entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And believing that everything you see is a performance,
right.
You know, you say to yourself, "Well, yes, this woman is performing. She's pretending to like me. If there wasn't money here, she wouldn't be having sex with me,
right.
And she wouldn't be smiling and talking with me and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, but I think I think my judgment of how people behave is good enough that I can tell when she and I are connecting on some level.
Right. Exactly.
At least on the level that you connect with your waitress.
Right.
You know?
And any good sex worker, I think, who lasts in the business for any period of time, generally likes people, genuinely likes people, and also wants to be liked. You know, I mean, I think one of the things that's made this business so good for me is that I like people and I like to be liked. So I'm going to make an effort to connect and flirt and tease and do everything I can to make you like me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want me to like you, well, chances are we're going to like each other, you
right.
know, and that's real. And,
or you can keep it going for 2 hours, you know,
right.
or an hour.
Right, exactly. And once we get to the part, you know, once we get to the point where we like each other,
mm-hmm.
everything else just follows naturally.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
You can, and so you just find that you don't, you can just tell them how you want the session to go, what you want to happen.
I don't even have to tell them. I just kind of lead them through.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously they have input into it too, mm-hmm. you know, they want to do this, they don't want to do that, whatever.
Yeah, well, then also you have to somehow communicate your rules
yeah.
to people. So how does that go? I mean, when you have a client, you have a new client,
mm-hmm.
and obviously someone who's very experienced seeing sex workers,
mm-hmm.
they have a sense of what is okay and generally normal
mm-hmm.
behavior
mm-hmm.
in that situation. But if you have a new client who's never seen a sex worker
yeah.
before, how do you communicate the rules? So how do you communicate the rules of behavior when you have a new client?
Yeah, that's always a little tricky. I have no problem saying what is not acceptable, if that's necessary. And I find the majority of the people kind of know to just back off and let me lead. You know they can't say things, and this starts right from the phone, because, you know, if they say such and such, I'll hang up on them. But occasionally you get somebody who's really doesn't know what they're doing, and tends to be pushy, which is a bad combination, because then they're starting to, you know, they try to control everything, or they want this and that and this and that. And I just try to steer them in the right direction. And, you know, the problem is we have, you know, there's, because of the legal issues, because of that question, we can't always say things right away until we've seen somebody once or something like that. So
yeah.
you can't say, no, you can't, you know, say that on the phone until I'm ready to hang up on them, you know,
yeah.
or I don't want to talk about that yet. And you just have
I
to
see.
Assume, you know, and that's the thing. The client has to kind of assume, you know,
mm-hmm.
so if they've done their homework and their research and
mm-hmm.
they're willing to take a chance, then it's, everything goes fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've talked to plenty of clients who are not first-timers who say, you know, the first time they saw somebody, she stole their money, or, you know, they didn't get anything close to what they wanted or what they expected or anything
really?
Like that. Yeah. So I have, you know, some kind of rules on my website, things, you know, do's and don'ts kind of things. And
yeah, it's been a while since I looked at your website, but it seems to me you had a way of your thing.
I did like a fat FAQ to
yeah.
let people know, you know.
This is how to talk to me.
Yeah, kind of, you know, it's just guidelines.
But what would you say generally? When if someone was to call a sex worker,
mm-hmm.
if someone, you know, you see an ad on the
right.
internet.
Right.
And if you were a guy.
Right.
And so the first thing I think that I would tell someone would be, first thing you're going to do is you're going to spend $300 or $400. You need to realize that.
Right.
You're not going to, and if a woman says she'll do something, if it's $100 or something, you're not going to get anything close to what you're looking for.
Yeah, and it does depend on what part of the country you're in.
Mm.
If you're in a major city, you're going to pay more, you know, $300 or $400 isn't that outrageous here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can get, you know, you can do better in other
yeah.
parts of the country that are just not as high economically. Even, you know,
mm-hmm.
going to San Jose or to Sacramento, mm-hmm. you can get better prices if you
yeah.
really want to.
Yeah, but you're still talking about $200 to $300.
Yeah, probably.
For, you know, things. And then, of course, there's two levels of service.
Oh, there's probably
there's
more than
escort
two
and massage,
oh,
as they
well,
say.
Oh, well, yes, there's that, yeah. Domination,
mm-hmm.
there's, you know, people who do all kinds of things. And I think in other parts
mm-hmm.
of the country, they also call it, you know, they have dancers and models and things like that.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, so the basic difference is for escorting, you're paying the higher price, you're getting more services. For
mm-hmm.
massage, it's usually kind of a limited service.
Yeah. So if someone was calling you up and they were going to get you on the phone,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you want someone who's going to communicate clearly,
mm-hmm.
but not somebody who's going to be rude. And I think for a lot of guys calling, you know, like for the first time, if they're
right.
calling for the first time, what they're most concerned about is not being rude to the woman that they're calling.
Right, right.
And that's what stops most guys, frankly, I think, from calling sex workers.
Is that they're afraid of?
They're afraid of being rude, of committing a social faux pas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know. And, you know, I can get kind of impatient when I'm in a bad mood with people on the phone.
Yeah.
My phone manner sometimes leaves a little to be desired.
Yeah. You and I both done sex work, and the phones are the worst because very often you get people that have no social skills whatsoever.
Right.
Who can pick up and dial a phone for some reason.
Right.
And
but not much else.
Yeah. And so as soon as they get on the phone, they start trying to have free phone sex with you.
Right. Mm. And, you know, there's plenty of people who are out scamming.
Yeah.
And it seems like they seem to call in waves. And, you know, if I get three of those calls and then somebody real calls me, I just tend to be already on my alert and suspicious. And
so it's frustrating. But generally, I think if someone were to call you, what you would hope the conversation would be, you know, they would identify themselves.
Yes, I
give
really
you a
like
name.
When people give me a name. It doesn't even have to be your real name. Just say, hi, this is John.
Yeah.
Because, you know, then it's like you're a real person talking to me as a real person.
Right.
Treat me with respect.
And they're not calling a garage with a price list.
Right.
You're calling a professional, a service professional, which is different than people who deliver pizzas or press your clothes or whatever. You're talking about someone who delivers intimate services.
Right.
So you're going to want to approach the person on that level, and you're going to want to say, you give them a name, and you say, and then tell you where they found out about you.
Yes,
whether it was from a friend of theirs or most likely these days on the internet.
Right.
I saw your ad on such and such a website.
Right.
Because then right away you know this is A, a real person.
Right.
And B, they're probably telling you the truth.
Right.
So they're not lying to me about, I saw your ad in the back of such and such a magazine. When I don't advertise in magazines anymore.
Yeah, although, you know, there's so many websites these days stealing ads that, I get people call up and say, I saw your ad on such and such a website. I'm like, I've never even heard of this website because they've stolen it off of one I paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And while people may think that's a good thing, they're not updated, they're often limited information, and I end up dealing
with... Sometimes they just steal your picture.
Yeah.
And they give their phone number.
It really makes me mad.
For some fly-by-night escort service.
Yeah, exactly, because they're trying to build up their, their content.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But anyway, then there's always that question of price, too, because, you know, when I call up somebody, you know, I'd really like to know how much money to bring, you know.
Yeah, I can't imagine someone not saying their price, but I know some of the online places won't put the price on there. I like to just put it all out there. You know, this is my hourly rate. I don't negotiate. I don't charge extras. You know, I mean, there's in the past, and when I worked in Nevada, it's all about the negotiation. So, you know, there's a basic price, but if you want this, you pay this, and if you want this, I don't do any of that.
There's more of a McDonald's kind of a thing at the brothels in Nevada, really.
Well, no, it's more of a moment-by-moment negotiation.
Oh, really?
You know, you want this? Okay,
well,
it's going to be another $50.
Well, it's an upsell.
Yeah, it's an upsell, exactly. Yeah. And I hate that. I hate that. I do not do that. It's like, this is a one price for you know, my
time. But of course, this is a different service than you get in a brothel.
Yes.
We're talking now about contacting... an escort.
An independent escort.
Someone who's like you, who's at the top of your business. This is, you know, what you do is pretty much the top of the line.
Well, no, there are people who charge a lot more than that.
Charge a lot more, but I mean the general quality of service you offer.
I don't think so. I haven't actually been to that many escorts.
And as far as, you know, the least amount of danger, you know, calling someone like you is much, much less risky. Than picking up a girl on the street, or a boy on the street, for that matter, or even calling one of those escort services.
Right. Because you never know who you're going to get from there.
Yeah.
And I've tried working for an escort service a couple of times, but I honestly hate out calls.
Yeah.
I like people to come to me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, there's the question of in call and out call, and the guy needs to decide before he calls you whether he wants you to come over to his house or he wants to come over to your place.
I mean,
there are a lot of women that only do out calls, and there are a lot of women that only do out calls to big hotels.
Right. I'll do some of those. I'll do hotel out calls for multiple hours, but
yeah.
I honestly hate leaving home. I'm a homebody.
And then there are a lot of women like you that only do in-call.
Right.
Meaning they have to come over to where you are.
Right.
And they have to decide before they even make the call whether that's what they want.
Right.
And so the phone call is, you know, hello, my name is so-and-so, I saw your ad here. You know, I'm looking for this. You know, in-call, this kind of experience. And I was wondering if you could tell me about your rates and availability.
Yeah, that's a good way to start. And the other thing I would offer to people who are looking for escorts is, if the person has a website or an ad, read it. Don't just look at the pictures. We know you like the pictures. That's good. The pictures are there for a reason. However, the text is as well. And, you know, for some of us, I mean, I know there are ads out there that say, I'm hot and sexy and I'll make you feel... like a king. Yeah. But, you know, some of us spend hours writing...
Well, you've written an entire FAQ.
Yes, I have an FAQ, I have a bio, I have all kinds of information, detailed information about my services, as much information as I can give, and that's there for a reason. It's so that you don't have to ask me all of this on the phone. Mm-hmm. Now, I know sometimes you want to ask some questions, I like to have a conversation with a person on the phone because it tells me something about them. But when you ask, like, you know, the basic questions, where are you located? I mean... Mm-hmm. You know, you should know that already before we call.
Yeah, because it says you're downtown.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that point you've had the conversation with the person, and also you should probably know before you call up a service provider, an escort, that you're probably not going to get a same day appointment.
Right.
Don't call up at noon and want to come over in an hour.
Yeah, some people do that. I mean, you know, that's how they work. But
that's unusual.
It's unusual for the escorts of my level.
Yeah.
Maybe 3 or 4 hours in advance, you know, 6 hours in advance. But, you know, next day is...
Yeah, 24 hours.
Yeah.
Figure if you're going to think, I'm going to have some free time tomorrow night.
Right.
Or tomorrow afternoon at lunch. So I'll call up today and make the appointment.
I don't understand. People plan all sorts of other things in their lives. Why do they feel like they can't plan sex?
Yeah. Well, that's it. Maybe it's not. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because you don't think about it. It takes you so long to work up the nerve to make the call.
Yeah.
And you call it the last possible moment before you have to go to get over there. It's a fear thing, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't know. This is where we draw the line between myself and normal men.
Because you are definitely not a normal man.
I'm not a normal man. As far as I can tell, I'm much more widely experienced than most men.
Yes.
You know. And because I know a lot of working girls.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question now.
Sure.
So, you know, I get asked this question a lot. Is like, you know, it must be hard to date, to find a guy who's comfortable with someone being a sex worker. So how do you feel dating a sex worker? And why is that not an issue for you?
Why is it not an issue for me?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I've been a sex worker.
That helps.
Yeah. You know, when I was younger a lot, and just a few years ago before I... before I became disabled and things. So I am not prey to jealous fantasies at the same level that other men might be.
Mm-hmm.
Probably dating a sex worker is probably the same reason, it doesn't bother me for the same reason that it doesn't bother me to have open relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not particularly jealous.
Right.
And when I am jealous, I realize that it's my issue, not yours.
Right.
That it's something that I need to deal with.
Right.
I won't even say it's a problem. It's just something that I need to deal with.
Right.
It's not something I need to be mad at you about.
Right.
You didn't make me jealous. So, and also, like I said, I know a lot of sex workers, so it's a job.
Yeah.
And I know that what you and I do is on an entirely different level than what you do with your clients.
Right.
I mean, to me, being upset that your lover is a sex worker, it would be the same thing as... if your partner cooked you dinner and you were upset because they cooked for other people.
Right.
You know, it's a sharing of skill.
Right.
But it's not necessarily a sharing of intimacy.
Right. And while I may love my clients in some sort of open, general way, it's not the way I love you or any of my lovers, so.
Yeah, and besides, you have a right to variety.
Right.
I mean, I've had multiple relationships with multiple men and women.
Right.
And one of the great things about that is the variety.
Right.
That you get, not only in the variety in sex, but the variety in relationship.
Right.
So, you know, there's no reason why you shouldn't enjoy your the relationship you have with your clients on that level. I mean, I'd be upset if you met a client and decided you were going to leave me for that, and you couldn't see me anymore because,
yeah.
You know. But I don't really see that happening. Yeah. I have enough confidence in myself and in our relationship.
I mean, I've been non-monogamous or polyamorous for, you know, my entire adult life. I've never been a monogamous person. So that's it's hardly going to change now, you know, let's face it.
Yeah, even if you're not doing it for money
right.
in the future, you'll still be looking
right.
looking or be open to you know, multiple relationships.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Or having, you know, letting each relationship find its appropriate level.
Yeah, exactly.
As we say.
Exactly.
Whether that's going to be an intimate sexual relationship or whether it's just going to be a casual friendship or
right.
or just a momentary lust.
Some of my favorite are just momentary lusts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a transformational experience, actually, is being overcome by lust.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, that takes you out of your identity.
Oh, yeah.
Because immediately you start tossing overboard all the behavioral rules you normally give yourself. You know, I'm not someone who goes to bed with people immediately, except for you, you know, for some reason.
You know, why is it that people have those rules that's bad? That's what I always wonder about.
We were just talking about that this morning.
Yeah.
And we were walking around, you know, why do people who don't have sex think that it's immoral to have casual sex?
Yeah, yeah. I have to admit, you know, being a sex worker is one thing that makes me different, but honestly, I think the fact that I'm innately different has made me a sex worker and a good sex worker.
Okay, so that's about as much time as we have for today. I want to thank you, Sunny Simone. And I will do an outro on this interview, in which I'll talk about your website and your and show notes and things like that. But you know, if people do want to get in touch with you, they can probably do that through your website, sunnysimone.com.
Absolutely. Thanks for talking to me. It was fun.
Yeah. Thanks. And that was my conversation with Sunny Simone. I hope you found it as entertaining and enlightening listening to it as I did actually talking to her. If you would like to get in touch with Sunny and have her come speak at your civic organization, for example, or some such thing, you can reach her through her website at www.sunnysimone.com, SunnySimone.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, Gentleman Junkie Jack, you can reach me through my website at gentlemanjunkie.com. That's junkie with a Y. If you spell it with an IE, you will be staring at the website of a goth band of some kind. On my site, you'll find an email address and a phone number for messages and faxes, which is 206-666-4119. And there you will also, hopefully, find show notes and various other bits of useful information. And please feel free to leave a comment on the blog or send me your impressions, anything you feel is appropriate or inappropriate. Just give me some feedback. And speaking of music, the music you are hearing in the background is by Devin Anderson at both the beginning and here at the end. And it is a piece of music called The End of a Rope, parenthesis, Black Angels, close parenthesis. I didn't choose that title. I just wanted to render it correctly. I'm using it under a Creative Commons license from the PodSafe Network, available at www.podsafeaudio.com. Is that it? I think it is. That's it for show number one. I'm beginning to work on the second one immediately, so it'll probably be up in less than a week, but you never can tell. Thank you so much for listening. This is Gentleman Junkie Jack reminding you that not everyone who looks normal actually is normal.